We had our last presentation in the first section on the future of assessment in the digital era. And I'd like to introduce Michael Coughlin, who's been working as a facilitator and thinker on issues to do with internet education and society for around 16 years. He was co-founder of Webhead's Online Community of Practice as one of the first Australian teachers to start teaching online. He's designed and delivered courses in English as a second language, online facilitation, and the use of new learning technologies. He works as an e-learning facilitator for TAFE South Australia, as a member of the Australian Horizon Report Advisory Board that advises on the future trends in educational technologies that both myself and Mike Keppel referenced before. In his spare time, Michael likes to contribute to photographs to the public domain via the internet and does a reasonable job of writing songs and singing them to anyone who will listen. Do we get a song today?
Probably not.
Without further ado, Michael, please take a seat.
I'd just like to make it clear that you don't have to have the name Michael to be on the Horizon Report Advisory Board. Helps. There are no more Michaels on the program. I've looked this afternoon and tomorrow. Everybody has a different name. But I'm the third Michael this morning, and I'm the person who represents the vet sector, and I'd like to thank conference organisers for asking me to do that. I have to say I feel a little bit of the burden to represent an incredibly large and complex sector, and I think I should probably say at this point that some of the views that you're going to hear in the next half hour are not necessarily the views of the management. It's going to be really interesting to see how this little talk fits into what we've already heard. You can see on screen that I'm going to make reference to a couple of papers, the research about e-learning and e-assessment in the vet sector, pose that question, which has already been discussed this morning in relation to higher ed staff: do people actually have the skills and competence to do assessment for the digital age? I'm going to look at some examples of what's happening in the world of e-assessment out there in the vet sector, and I'm going to close with a reference to something which I'm calling the assessment obsession, because in the vet sector, unlike, I gather, what's happening in higher ed, it's been put front and centre to the point where, it, in my opinion, it's completely out of whack to the other end. And whatever happened to teaching is my sub-question to this, because it's no longer very relevant, in my opinion, in vet. It's all about the end product. It's all about assessment. This is a token nod to what is e-assessment. You can see it's a random dump of thoughts from people in a brainstorming exercise from Blackboard Collaborate. So people have put their ideas there on a screen. It's about forums, it's about blogs, it's about e-portfolios, quizzes, online role play, and all the rest of it. And I think it's a quick, easy way to look at the fact that e-assessment is also a very complicated beast. And I think it's a bit of a metaphor for the vet sector. And anyone who stands up and makes broad sweeping statements about the Australian vet sector can easily be countered with examples of things where it's different. And I guess I am going to make some broad sweeping statements. So again, I'm just kind of allowing people who might disagree with me to go right ahead. What does the research tell us? I'm going to start by looking at this paper that was published in 2010 by Victor Callan and Berwyn Clayton. They were looking particularly at the role between the AQTF auditors and the vet practitioner. AQTF no longer exists, but it was for AQTF stood for the Australian Qualifications Training Framework. It's been superseded by ASQA. That is nothing else but a generator of acronyms. ASQA is the Australian Skills Qualifications Authority, but they have that same role in regulating what goes on in the vet sector. You have to understand, if you don't already, that when you're a vet practitioner, a lecturer in the vet sector, it's not just you and your students when it comes to assessing. You do that, but then there's other process that's layered over the top where an external auditor comes in, and if you're really lucky, you're chosen, like when you come through baggage check at the airport, they do an extra check on you, and the auditors will do an extra check on you, and they will want proof and evidence to show why you approve that student as competent on that day and that competency, and you have to be able to provide that evidence. What this paper found is this: many vet staff don't actually have a proper understanding of assessment, period, let alone e-assessment. And they discovered that 90% of e-assessment was done via quizzes and largely multiple choice. Furthermore, many practitioners were not sure what was acceptable to auditors. This results in a culture, in my opinion, of meek compliance and an unwillingness to innovate. Because auditors, by and large, are not educators. They come in and they're bureaucrats to check your processes. They may not understand what you're trying to achieve as an educator and may have very strong opinions about the kind of assessment that you are able to carry out. So this led to a dialogue between the auditor, the regulator and the sector, and I was part of a panel in New South Wales which actually had a fairly senior person from the AQTF at the time present, so we asked them these kinds of questions. This is a screenshot from a video using point of view technology from an apprentice in remote Australia demonstrating that they're competent in fitting service gauges. We posed the question to the auditor, is this fair and valid e-assessment? Similarly, this is another apprentice wandered around a roof where he'd fitted battens, and I don't know what battens are, but the question was this kind of point of view technology, this wearable technology, acceptable as evidence to demonstrate competence? And the first example on this slide, we've got in hairdressing, video, photographs created by students, user-generated content referred to earlier, created on the phone, showing various stages of cutting someone's hair. Is this sufficient to demonstrate competence? Is this sufficient evidence? And the last example here, a video created by a student of one of his peers to demonstrate the safe use of a hand and power tool. Were these acceptable in terms of fair, valid assessment? Now, the person at the time said yes in all of these cases, and also urged the educator, the lecturer, making these decisions to accept this kind of evidence as assessment, valid assessment, to stand up for your profession and explain to the auditor person why you did it, and to explain, and just back your judgment. So yes was the simple answer. However, 2 weeks ago, in a conversation with a Queensland vet lecturer, she was told this by an auditor. She'd been doing peer assessment, collaborative assessment. Auditor didn't understand, didn't accept, and said, I suggest you steer away from collaborative assessment. Too hard to verify and validate. And that's what people are up against. Do vet practitioners, the teachers anywhere in Australia, in any sector, have the skills to deliver assessment for the digital age? I'd like to refer to this report, a paper from John Ward and John Mitchell, also back in 2010, where they looked at the skills that were required to be a successful practitioner in the Australian vet sector. They divided the skills they identified into categories, basic, intermediate and advanced. And what was interesting, that e-learning was seen by the 2,000 people who took part in this study as part of an advanced skill set. And when those 2,000 people were asked, do you see yourself as having these advanced skill sets to effectively deliver e-learning? And I'm going to leave you thinking there for a minute about what the answer was. I guessed it right. I work in this area and have for a long time. And I don't think it's any different in higher ed or schools. And I don't think it's any different in this country or others. And the answer was less than 10%. Less in 2010 felt they had the advanced skills necessary to effectively deliver e-learning and e-assessment. Okay, 3 years have passed. I'm sure it's improved. But I know it's a smattering of people. It might be 10, 15% who might now say, yep, I've got the skills to do that. The vast majority, to echo what we've heard this morning, simply don't. Interesting that it conflicts with what's happening out in the real world. TAFE has a lot to do with manual activities, hands-on activities, not exclusively, but this is an article from the Daily Telegraph in February, I think it was, which was talking about what they call TERDs. TERDs is trades plus nerds. These are tradies who are out on the job using iPads on iPhones and laptops to plan their jobs, track their jobs, allocate jobs, assess jobs, mark them off as finished or not. And there's a lot of evidence to show that out there in the real world, tradespeople are actually leading the way in terms of the technology, but it's not reflected back in the training environment in the vet sector, in my opinion. I think it's a lot more prevalent, the use of this technology is more prevalent in the real world than it is in the training ground. Now, these kind of disturbing revelations prompted the Australian Flexible Learning Framework, which also no longer exists, it's now called the National VETI Learning Strategy, to generate a number of really quite useful resources about how do you do e-assessment. So they produced little videos on peer assessment, collaboration, how to use text assessment, how to use media and assessment, and there are resources where you can find all these. I listed on the slides, which you can access later. It broke down the assessment process into these various subcategories. And someone mentioned this morning that assessment really is a very complicated thing. And it tends to be the last thing that teachers in higher ed think of. And I think it's probably the same everywhere. But there are the stages. There's a link there which I won't go to. You can watch this later if you wish. It's a nice little example, but it's a 5-minute video of what the different stages are in assessment and how you can use e-tools to satisfy these various stages of the process. Echoing what Marcia said earlier, despite the fact that I think the vast majority don't really feel very confident to do this stuff, there are pockets of absolute excellence. And it was the same in 1997 when I first went online. And I found a group of people around the world who were doing amazing things, pushing boundaries, exploring technology, playing with it, as Mike Keppel said. And we became this community of practice. But what was common to every one of us is though there were hundreds of us talking to each other on a daily basis, most of us were the lone ranger where they were working. Or you're one of two or three in a particular faculty or a particular part of the school who were using this. Most of them were ignored and not supported by the rest of their organisation. I'd still say that's pretty much the same. Let's look at a couple of examples. Virtual worlds were referred to earlier. These are some screenshots from Second Life, which seems to have betrayed educators in the main who've gone over to where the open sim environment, and virtual worlds have definitely kind of lost their place of priority as a place where educators in the vet sector hang out these days. But I want to mention a couple of wonderful examples that both come from GIPS TAFE here in Victoria. In the certificate, in training people to be drug and alcohol counsellors, they took a group of these students into Second Life. And Second Life, like life here, is full of dodgy, seedy, late-at-night places where you wouldn't go in Melbourne at 3 o'clock in the morning, and maybe you shouldn't go there in Second Life either, but you can. And they took these people there, and what they discovered is that people did offer them drugs. They did offer them all sorts of illicit activity, and they got to experience firsthand what it's like to be someone who's trying to recover from addiction to drugs and alcohol, to be constantly facing peer pressure and the sorts of environments they had to avoid. You couldn't take a group of people out into Melbourne at 3 o'clock in the morning and do that. You can in Second Life. GIPS TAFE bought an island, a piece of land in Second Life, and they got their building and construction students to design and build a hotel. And they were assessed on this. Once the hotel was complete, they got their hospitality students to come in and train in role play, front of house, concierge, and all the various roles that are associated with running a hotel. Again, you can't take a group of 20 students into a hotel all at once and have them run the place. You can in Second Life. And there's countless other examples where we've only seen the beginning of this kind of assessment. Stefan Schmidt is someone who works in the Northern Territory. He, like a lot of other people out there in the field, is how do you get the information that I see when I'm miles from anywhere onto a device which I can then seamlessly transfer back to a database which is typically sitting in an LMS. He's done a lot of work at looking at PDFs, Dropbox, and been able to go out into the field, manage that assessment process, have people physically sign off, like when the post office comes to the door these days, you have to sign on a digital tablet, and that goes automatically via Dropbox from an iPad back to your LMS. A really innovative way of mobile assessment in the field. I won't talk about e-portfolios as they've already been addressed a couple of times this morning. This is an example from hairdressing and Sydney Institute of TAFE. This is a slightly different tack. This is a shot from a classroom where people are being taught the responsible service of alcohol. And on that table is the best collection of alcohol I've ever seen. And when these students come to the practical assessment, they actually have to mix the drinks right there in front of the lecturer. Behind them you'll see is a screen, a Moodle screenshot, and that's where the theory and underpinning knowledge is presented and assessed. But the practical stuff is done right there in a very practical way. New Media Consortium, who are the organisation behind the Horizon Reports mentioned earlier, sponsored a retreat in January last year where they gathered 100 people from all over the world, from all sectors, to talk about this question of the future of education. That group of people identified 10 trends which they considered to be having an impact on education, again, everywhere in all sectors. I'm just going to talk about the first one to kind of further build on what's been said this morning about working in collaborative ways. We can do this better. Despite the little anecdote earlier of the auditor saying, I suggest you steer away from collaborative assessment, that's just not an option. We need to think more about how collaboration can be the principal form of assessment. And I love the phrase, designed for cheating. It was phrased this morning, this issue of, you know, how can you tell that it's the student who's doing the work? How can you tell it's not copied from somewhere else? Now, I know it's different depending on your subject, your skills, your student skills, where your students are, how many students you've got. But my automatic response to anyone who's worried about that kind of stuff is redesign your assessment. You've got your assessment all wrong if that's an issue. Design for cheating. Your assessment tasks should require that I talk to you, that you need to talk to them, that you go off to the internet and search a few sites, maybe even go to a library, synthesize all of that, come back and answer the question. This is real learning. This is long-time learning. These are lifelong learning skills, and there's no question of cheating. Yes, it is more difficult to assess because collaborative and peer assessment has a whole lot of little hassles in there, but it's not insurmountable. In the vets and in the higher ed sector, you've got graduate attributes. In the vet sector, we've got employability skills. These are a list of skills identified by industry as things they want students to have when they exit vet and come into work in industry. In the higher ed sector, I know every organisation can come up with their own list of graduate attributes. In the vet sector, they're constant. It's a list that we all operate to. But whatever your list of graduate attributes is, I'm sure there's a lot of crossover. They're nearly always the same. And the ones with a big tick alongside them are the ones that are particularly well designed, or there's a good match with collaborative approaches. I was in an online session recently where Jeremy Blaine, who's the CEO of a training organisation in the Pacific called Seagulls Asia, said he gets really annoyed when these things get referred to as the soft skills. And he said soft skills are the hard skills of industry. And what he meant was, it's really hard to find people with those skills. Really hard. And that's what they want. It was mentioned earlier that when we go out into the real world, what do? We talk. We work together. We collaborate. In fact, the only time you ever sit in a room on your own with a computer or a piece of paper in total silence is when you do an assessment at the end of a course. Then life begins and you never, ever, ever have to do that ever again. Soft skills are what we need out there in the real world. Just yesterday, I was in another online virtual webinar, and for those who might be interested, how do I know more about this, or colleagues who want to know how do you do more about this, there are dozens of these things every week, online webinars about everything to do with e-learning, and in this case, e-assessment. This was a project funded by the National eVet Learning Strategy for a number of people from the Pharmacy Guild in South Australia got together to do a unit on team building. It's a unit of competence. And it was to be done principally by a peer assessment. It was a very structured exercise, very supported, scaffolded. But it was amazing listening to the report on this project yesterday, just how well it went and how people who would normally be in competition with each other, the pharmacist from the next suburb, broke or let the competitive barriers drop and just got into collaborating and peer assessing. Interestingly, they didn't allow the peer assessment to be the summative assessment. they stopped short at that point and thought they need to have the real teacher, the real lecturer and assessor make the final judgment, but still a great example of how peer assessment can work. And for those of you who may use Moodle, it was done via the Moodle workshop tool, which is a really great tool for enabling this kind of assessment, peer assessment. Some of you might know David Jonasson. David Jonasson writes widely on the concept of constructivism, and he was here in Australia some years ago and gave a series of talks. And the talk he gave in Adelaide, I've never forgotten the moment, where he was talking about various models of constructivist methodology and teaching that he'd seen from around the world. And he described a project where a group of 14 to 15-year-olds in a US high school were given the brief of addressing the peak traffic congestion problems around their school in the morning and the afternoon. So that was their brief, solve the problem. They were then able to talk to teachers, other community members, teachers, parents, public transport, council, whatever they needed to get the information they needed to make a decision. They were to create a model and document the process. This is not the model, but it's just an idea of a model. But what was absolutely revealing to everybody in that room who listened to that experiment and looked at what the students came up with, there was no need to assess. It was done. So that total integration of the teaching and the learning and the assessment was all just accomplished by a good design, obviously support and a flexible structure that allowed children to work a little bit differently from 40-minute slots in a classroom governed by a bell. I want to mention this one just briefly because it's one of, I just think it's worth floating this idea. This is a screenshot from a graphic facilitation workshop, well, a workshop that included graphic facilitation by Nancy White, who lives in Seattle, about climate change. Some of you will have heard Ken Robinson talk on TED Talks or other places. He also wrote a fantastic book called The Element. And Ken Robinson suggests that one of the reasons the world finds things like climate change really difficult to solve is because our education systems produce experts in economics, sociology, physics, archaeology, and we don't produce people with a vision that is multidisciplinary, that is able to take in all the strands of a complex modern system. And I think another example here in Australia is the Murray River system. We seem completely unable to separate self-interest from what is a global good or a macro requirement, because perhaps we don't produce people in our education systems who have this kind of visionary thinking. Just a thought. So my last point, be careful what you wish for, because if you want to have more assessment, or assessment being more central to the design of your teaching, there are pitfalls. And like I said, the vet sector, in my opinion, has gone completely the other way. This is a screenshot from a word cloud from the teaching and learning outcomes document that we used in around the year 2000. So I just took all the words that were used in that document and put them into a Wordle, which was the tool used here, and you can see that the word front and centre at the process in 2000 was learning. That means that word was used more often in the documentation about the aims of that program. Fast forward 13 years to the Teaching and Learning Certificate, Teaching and Assessment Certificate. You can see it's now assessment is front and centre. So in 13 years, the vet sector's changed from being something that was primarily organised and based around learning to something which is now based around assessment. I actually asked a group of people recently, and this is not research by any means, it was just something I did recently leading up to this talk to get a snapshot of what was going on among the people in the vet sector. About 50 people responded to my survey. I asked them approximately what percentage of your time do you currently spend on managing assessment processes. Around 50% said somewhere between 25 and 50%. 16% said over 50%. Now, a key thing here is assessment processes. It's not assessment per se, it's processes, and I'll come back to that. Has your time, or has the amount of time you spend on assessment increased in the last 5 years? 20% said it's increased slightly, 50% said it's increased a lot. And I've heard these conversations every day, and I hear them in the school sector. And I've actually heard it about higher ed too, but not particularly perhaps in relation to assessment, but admin requirements generally. There's no doubt that teachers across Australia in all sectors are having less and less time to plan materials, design lesson plans, or think about different methodologies. There's less and less time to do it, because I hear the conversation daily. There are some comments from lecturers. I'll let you read those for a minute. I just want to direct your attention to this one, the third dot point here, where we've got this word quality. A lot of time is spent on the quality requirements now, filing assessments, tracking training plans, etc. Quality requirements, filing, tracking. This one down here. Quality system also demands multiple records of many outcomes. This takes significant time. The word quality in the vet sector has been hijacked, and in the heads of many people in the vet sector, quality now just means assessment, process, reporting, auditing, accounting. And I get quite annoyed when the word quality, I think, has been... Well, I think it has been hijacked. And how do we stem the tide? This is Greg Whitby. Greg Whitby is the principal of a group of schools in New South Wales and Western Sydney. It's a Catholic system, but Greg Whitby's a great writer and thinker about what's going on in education, blogs regularly. He has his staff, whenever there's a new imperative coming in externally, to talk about or to implement some kind of process which might heat up teacher time, they ask these two questions. As a staff, question one, will it improve my teaching? Question two, will it reduce the amount of time I have to prepare lessons? If the answer to number one is no and two is yes, they just politely send it back to the bureaucracy and say, sorry, not doing it. They might say it's not that it's not worthwhile information or it's quite a good initiative, but it's not a teacher's job. You figure out some other way. They've come under enormous flack, both from bureaucracy and their own community, parents, but they've stood their ground. And I think educators across the nation need to be doing this. If the answer is no and yes, sorry, not doing it. So why has this all come about? I've talked about that. I think Sugata Mitra's on the money. He's the guy who was responsible for the hole-in-the-wall experiment in India many years ago. He said this has come about because of the short-sighted self-interest of politicians and the laziness and cowardice of many who work in education. Lazy's a bit strong because people are not lazy. They're working really hard, but we've been lazy and not accepting that some changes that I don't think are educationally good for anybody, personally. So where did the accession come from? I'll whiz through this to amount of time, but there they are. The last straw has been most recently where funding models in the vet sector have changed, where you now only get paid for students who complete a course or a unit of competence. 5 years ago, 2 years ago even, if you had a class of 20 students and three of those students exited during the semester to get a job, that was a win-win. That was great. That was a celebration because that's ultimately the goal. Now we don't get paid for those three students. The whole thing, in my opinion, is kind of erred too far to the right. And it's come about because we have this culture of compliance, this risk aversion, which is going right through society. We are all punished for the sins of a few. We all remember those times back in class when we were in school and a couple of kids mucked around when the teacher was looking at the board, and then the teacher would say, who did that? Who threw those papers? Who was talking? No one owns up, so you all stay in at lunchtime. Now that's how society runs. Ken Robertson again, the dominant culture of education has come to focus not on teaching and learning, but testing. This leads to a culture of compliance rather than creativity. And Greg Whitby again, in relation to NAPLAN, it's not the test that counts, but the teaching that's critical. And good teachers know this. Just a light note, wearable computing. 5 years from now, there'll be people wearing Google Glass all day long, recording everything they see and hear. They'll be wearing Momoto cameras who take photographs 24/7, so an auditor wants to know what that student did on the 24th of May last year, we'll just call up the file which shows where they were that day, and there it is. Thank you.
Questions?